Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Sylvia Sparza, and I represent Mr. Uribe Santillan. The question for this court really today is to decide whether Mr. Uribe has been deprived of his due process. And the answer to that question is yes. If I just may briefly go over his procedural history, which will show how Mr. Uribe was deprived of his day in court. On August 1, 2012, Mr. Uribe appeared with his former counsel and in immigration court. At that time, he requested attorney prep time. The immigration court allowed him 29 days to come back to court and take pleadings and also to present any applications for relief. At that time, on August 29th, when he came to court, Mr. Uribe's former counsel admitted that he had entered without inspection and then disputed that he had been convicted of a crime involving moral turpitude. The court asked if he had applications for relief at that time, and Mr. Uribe's former counsel said no.
Your claim for ineffective assistance is that he didn't seek a continuance of the proceedings in order to pursue the I-130, correct?
Well, there's several. One is that he didn't submit the applications for relief, which there's a presumption of prejudice this court has found in
right,
various cases.
Right, but the application for relief would have been a continuance of the removal proceedings to seek the I-130 application.
Yeah. That's another
Well, I don't understand issue. what other relief he could have sought.
So he was seeking a cancellation of removal for certain non-lawful permanent
right.
residents, and plus he was also eligible for adjustment of status
right.
based on
but
that.
But the argument for cancellation of removal was that he was eligible for an I-130. He didn't have any other basis to seek cancellation of removal, did he?
There's two forms of relief. He could have had a cancellation of removal for non-lawful permanent residents, and then there's also adjustment of status, which is a separate
right.
form of relief.
But He wasn't a lawful permanent resident, correct?
Right, he wasn't.
So the only way he would have gotten relief, and I don't think we're, I just want to make sure we're on the same wavelength.
Yeah.
The only way he could have gotten relief was if he'd gotten either adjustment of status or gotten an I-130 visa, correct?
No, Your Honor. So he was eligible for cancellation of removal for certain non-lawful permanent residents. So if you're not a non-lawful permanent resident, you can apply for cancellation of removal and get your green card through that mechanism if you've got 10 years physical presence, if you have qualifying relatives, good moral character,
okay.
and hardship. And you can also get adjustment of status through that
Fair
I-130.
Enough, but for either of those avenues of relief,
correct.
You would be ineligible if you had a crime involving moral turpitude, correct?
Yes, you could. But you could, well, for the cancellation of removal, you can't have a crime involving moral turpitude. For the adjustment of status, you can request a 212H waiver
right.
to waive.
Right. So, in other words, for each of them, so the question I want to focus on for a second is, if there was a crime of moral turpitude here, was counsel then ineffective?
Yes.
Why?
Because if there was a crime involving moral turpitude, he still would have been eligible for a 212H waiver under the adjustment of status provision.
Right. So we would have to determine that the failure to pursue that avenue of relief, what's the standard of prejudice that we have to look at? So let's assume that you're not eligible absent a waiver for that status.
Right.
And let's also assume that you can't get cancellation of removal if you have a CIMT.
Okay.
Crime involving moral turpitude.
Yes. So the standard...
Assume both of those... What kind of prejudice do we have to find from counsel's actions?
So the standard of prejudice on an ineffective assistance of counsel claim is if there is plausibility in the form of relief, not prima facie, as the government pointed out.
Right.
Prima facie is for a regular motion to
okay,
reopen.
Okay, and what I want you to focus on, because what would be helpful to me is this, and again, I'm assuming there was a crime involving moral turpitude. I know you argue the contrary
right.
in your brief. If there is one, how do we measure plausibility if the avenue of relief requires a discretionary waiver? I understand how to measure plausibility when we look at cases,
right.
but when we're looking at a discretionary waiver by the Attorney General, if you will,
right.
how do we measure plausibility?
Well, our position would be that plausibility is that there was a reasonable basis, right, on its face, without any more inquiry, without any more digging into it at that moment in time, was it reasonable for the judge to say, okay, he looks like he's eligible for cancellation of removal. Again, he never even raised the issue of the other alternative relief,
well,
which was
again,
adjustment of status.
Well, here's the problem I'm having, so I want you to help me. If he had a CIMT,
correct.
He was not eligible for cancellation.
For cancellation of removal.
Right, so now we're just looking at the discretionary waiver with respect to becoming
right.
a lawful permanent resident, if
correct.
You will.
Correct.
And so the question is, how do we measure the plausibility that the government would grant that discretionary waiver.
For for the adjustment of status, he had a really good case for a 212H waiver because there he all had to prove his extreme hardship. He had three USC children. One of them was severely sick. He had diabetes, took insulin all the time, had 3 to 5 times he had to take insulin. He had a seizure disorder. So the extreme hardship would have been much easier than extreme and unusual hardship in the cancellation of removal.
I agree.
So he had not just plausible for the adjustment of status issue, he had a prima facie case for adjustment of status coupled with that 212H waiver. But again, that item never even came up.
Slow down for a second.
Sorry.
Can you tell me what does the record reflect what the status of the I-130 application is today?
Is it still not current? There is a visa available. There is a visa available, and it's been available since 2015.
So tell me what, if you prevail, and we say there was ineffective assistance of counsel,
Can I clarify something?
Sure.
The government concedes that counsel's performance was deficient, correct?
Yes.
So all you have to show is the prejudice prong here.
Correct.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. And so I think my colleague was asking, what's the remedy you're asking for?
Exactly.
Right. So the remedy would be for this court to, of course, grant the petition and remand to the Board of Immigration Appeals for further proceeding, because if there was a prejudice, which the case law here in this court said that there's a presumption of prejudice when there's a failure to file applications for relief when the court has given a deadline.
Focus on the remedy for a second.
Okay.
We're assuming that you prevail. We send it back to the BIA to do what?
He can do adjustment of status, Your Honor, at this point, because he has I-130 that's approved and available, and he's eligible for the 212H waiver.
And how does that work? Just tell me how that works. He has to apply for adjustment of status. He might not get it, correct?
Right. I mean, as a matter of discretion, he might not get it.
So are we telling the BIA to stay the removal proceedings while he seeks adjustment of status? Tell me what you're seeking.
Right. So normally what happens is we would then, if this case was remanded to the Board of Immigration Appeals, we would then file all our applications together, the adjustment of status, the 212H waiver, and then ask the BIA to remand back to the court so that the court can then entertain that adjustment of status application with the waiver.
That application would be made by the application would be made to the IJ then, correct?
Yes, it could be done with
that's what I was trying
with
to
the immigration
out.
Court.
So if we remand to the BIA would then in turn remand to the IJ.
Correct.
Kind of like the Court of Appeals to the District Court.
Correct.
And your argument here is that whether or not, although you argue that at least one of the crimes are not crimes of moral turpitude or maybe both, but Your main argument, it seems to me, is that whether they are crimes of moral turpitude or not, that there was a plausible basis for the appellant to pursue his claim before the administrative law judge. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor. In addition to that, he didn't even get to argue. He didn't even get to present his case before the immigration court.
And we all understand the lawyer was ineffective. Now, let me parse this a little bit. I know you don't have much time left. If there is a crime involving moral turpitude, you can't get cancellation of removal.
So if we
concluded that and gave you relief, we would send it back to the BIA to allow you to pursue adjustment of status.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you want to reserve the remainder of
your
time?
Yes, I would. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Linda Doe, and I represent the respondent, the United States Attorney General. In this immigration matter, Petitioner Rube has not shown that reopening his 2012 proceedings is warranted, where he has not demonstrated prejudice by any ineffective assistance.
Why hasn't he demonstrated prejudice? We're all assuming the first prong of Strickland was met. Lawyers should have applied for a continuance. Your colleague says, I've got a plausible case for adjustment of status, even if there was a crime involving moral turpitude. The IJ may conclude otherwise, but why shouldn't we let Mr. Uribe pursue that course?
Because he hasn't shown that he would be eligible for adjustment of status. He hasn't shown that he has a viable claim for adjustment of status.
He'd have to get a waiver. But waivers are granted, and he's been in the country for a long time, and there's family hardship. Is it implausible that he would be granted a waiver?
To establish eligibility for adjustment of status, you need to have an application for adjustment, have an immediately available visa, show that he'd be eligible to receive such a visa, and be admissible. In this instance, he's not admissible to the United States.
The plausibility of the plausibility standard is they use may, and that's how we conflate the discretion of the agency into the plausibility standard. Is that it's a may have been eligible for relief standard. It's not a would have been eligible for relief standard.
I respectfully note, Your Honor, that in this instance, he has not shown.
Wait, you didn't answer my question. You agree with me that's the standard, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So what part of this I understand he's got to get a waiver, but what other part of eligibility for adjustment of status hasn't he shown?
He hasn't shown that he'd be eligible to receive such a waiver. In this instance,
why?
He claims that he would be eligible for an F-1 or F-2 visa as an unmarried son of an LPR or a United States citizen father. He submitted tax documents indicating that he's been married and has been married as early as 2003. So in light of that, it's uncertain that he would be eligible to receive such a waiver.
Why?
I mean,
the standard is may, so it is, yeah. He doesn't have to show it's certain. The whole thing on an ineffective assistance of counsel claim is that because his counsel performed deficiently, he never had a chance to put his claim on the merits to the agency. And that's why the standard is really quite low. It's the May standard, not, you know, has a viable claim. And it's also up to the agency in the end to determine the merits of that claim.
Your Honor, that's he was able to submit evidence with his motion to reopen. And in that, he could have submitted an application for adjustment of status. He could have submitted further evidence in support of a 212H waiver. In this instance, he submitted a cancellation application. And in that cancellation application, he stated that he was married. And he further submitted tax documents indicating that he had been married as early as 2003.
You've said that twice, but yeah. Explain your position. Is your position that because he admits he was married, he's ineligible for an F-1 or F-2 waiver?
Yes, because those categories require that he be an unmarried son. So in addition to being inadmissible to the United States.
What you're doing is asking us to kind of adjudicate the merits of his claim, and that's not what we're supposed to be doing.
But we're actually looking at prima facie eligibility, the statutory requirements.
So saying is the record in this case demonstrates his ineligibility for a waiver?
Well, regarding a waiver, Your Honor?
Yeah, that's all we're talking about is a waiver.
I would say that his 2008 conviction supports against
Well, of course it cuts
warranting.
Against it. That's not the question. The question is, let's assume that his lawyer had acted competently and asked for a continuance to pursue adjustment of status. I don't think he can get cancellation because he's ineligible. For adjustment of status, he'd have to get a waiver because of his crime involving moral turpitude. Are you telling me he's ineligible for any waiver?
That'd be uncertain without having an application for a waiver, Your Honor. There was no application
right,
submitted.
Right, because his lawyer was ineffective in failing to file an application for cancellation of removal. That's why there's no application.
But he didn't submit it with his motion to reopen either.
No, his second lawyer may have been ineffective also. I don't know who it was in not submitting the application. She may be sitting here. And not providing sufficient evidence on the motion to reopen. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Your Honor. Because in the motion to reopen, he alleges that his former counsel failed to file an application for cancellation of removal on his behalf, yet submitted it with his motion to reopen.
Somebody should have, with the motion to reopen, said, here's what counsel should have done.
He could have provided an application for adjustment of status as well as the application for the 212H waiver.
But
so that way,
it
was to judge.
It isn't there, so we don't know.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And as such, he hasn't established the prerequisites for an adjustment of status.
So I understand your position. It's that Mr. Uribe hasn't demonstrated prejudice because his application in the motion to reopen doesn't contain what his original counsel should have filed had he operated effectively.
He has not shown the viability of his claim for adjustment of status.
All right. Counsel, do you have any additional arguments you want to make
I just wanted to further note that he is statutorily precluded from cancellation of removal in light of the fact that his 2008 aggravated attempted theft, or sorry, attempted forgery conviction.
I want to ask you one question about the conviction, if you will. It's only a conviction of one crime, is it? In other words, I've read the complaint and I've read the judgment of conviction. I know you all tried to put in the plea agreement, but the IJ didn't let you do it. But it's only one crime, attempted forgery, right? It's not three counts or several counts. It's attempted forgery in violation of several statutes.
Yes, Your Honors.
So is it a single sentence?
Yes, it was a 9-month sentence.
Yes, but I mean, it's not, he wasn't sentenced on two counts. He was just simply sentenced for attempted forgery, correct?
I believe so, Your Honor.
Okay.
And the violation of Nevada Revised Statute Section 205.110 is categorically a crime involving moral turpitude, where it expressly requires that an intent to defraud be an element of the offense.
All right. Thank you, counsel. I'm going to move things along here. I think you raised a good argument that I think we have to ask the opposing counsel about.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
And we request that the government or the court deny the petition for review and government rests on its brief. Thank you.
Counsel, the government counsel made the point that on the motion for reopening, the application for cancellation of removal wasn't submitted. What's your response to that?
Your Honor, she's correct that the motion to reopen did not include the adjustment of status, and that is because at that time when we filed the motion to reopen, there was no visa available at that time. However, for a motion to reopen based on ineffective assistance of counsel, you do not need to submit all of the applications. That's for a regular motion to reopen where you submit new facts. If you reopen this case, this is what I would submit, but not on an ineffective assistance of counsel claim a motion. That only requires you to identify the deficiencies in the proceedings, which we did.
Is your client eligible for adjustment of status?
Yes, he is, Your Honor.
Well, how can we tell that from this record?
Yes. It's hard to tell because none of the applications were filed at that time. And again, in 2012, there was no visa available, so the attorney didn't identify that potential relief and didn't submit the application. We didn't file it in 2012 because it was only 1 month later or a few months later, and there was no visa available at that time. So we couldn't have filed a motion to reopen to include that other application because it wasn't available at that time. We just identified, hey, there is this relief available in the near future, and near was just like a year or two out. And that's why it wasn't submitted at that time. So it wasn't ineffective on our part for not filing because it's not required. I did want to also just address the other issue about prima facie. That's the wrong standard, Your Honor. The standard is just plausibility, a plausible ground for relief, not prima facie, which is a much higher standard where you have to show that, you know, he meets all of the requirements and then give it to the judge to see if, as a matter of discretion, he's going to grant. So they're using the wrong standard. The correct standard was just plausible grounds for relief.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. Uribe Santillan versus Sessions is submitted, and we'll take up U.S. versus Juan.